Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
We're here today on Crew Call with two-time Oscar-winning filmmaker Ron Howard, who's talking about his latest movie, 13 Lives, about the Tam Luang Cave Rescue.
So, talk about getting 13 Lives off the ground, because there was a huge race for the rights to this afterwards. And there were I don't want to name them, but there was another producer who had gotten rights to, I think, the kids.
Okay. There have been several projects, and there were producers pursuing this. PJ Sandwick had and Gabrielle Tanna had gotten the rights to Rick and John and Jason and some of the divers. And PJ had also launched the documentary with Jimmy and Chai. And so using, you know, those same rights, but their expertise. So he then launched a scripted version. There was also another scripted version going on. It might have been at Universal, as I recall. And then a miniseries version, which was ultimately, you know, also produced. Meanwhile, PBS Thailand and the BBC and PBS had all sort of cooperated and done a fantastic series, doc series, almost immediately. So that already existed. So while I was when the script came to me, it was very far along by Bill Nicholson, and I was told that these other projects existed, but I just felt like it was a tremendous opportunity, and I also felt like it was such a big story, and frankly so worthy of being told in sort of, you know, from various different vantage points, and different, you know, modes, that, you know, if I could be one of them, I wanted to, you know, and I just didn't worry about it too much beyond that. What I did worry about was, and then we had the script. And so then we took it together collectively, you know, Karen Lunder and Brian and myself from Imagine and PJ and Gabby. And, you know, and we sort of shared that with the marketplace, and it landed at MGM. And later MGM was acquired by Amazon. We've been lucky that everywhere we've gone, we've had a lot of support and been well taken care of, I felt.
Is it a testament to great producers, the fact that you were first?
The documentary, Jimmy and Chai's documentary came out first, but we knew that was going to happen. They were well into it.
Feature-wise.
We certainly moved swiftly, and I think it was a testament to our collective will, but it required the support of Mike DeLuca and Pam Abdi at MGM, and a real clear commitment. COVID interrupted it and stalled us for about 6 months, which was a little frustrating, because there was kind of just a freeze and we don't know when and how we can really do this. So, you know, we kept working on the script, kept talking to cast. By then I got sort of a couple of a couple of guys, Raymond Pathanavi Rangoon and Billy Rudovanich, and they came in and began translating the script, and they were going to work with us as cultural advisors, and they wound up being so valuable that I asked them to stay with the production as co-producers and help me monitor the cultural accuracy throughout, and they're also, you know, they're creative and also contributed creatively, and even more importantly, built a fantastic bridge between myself and the Thai actors, and so the actors began to see that there was a real trust and a real urgent desire on my part to get it right and to work with them and for them to flesh out their characters and ensure that, you know, that we were presenting contemporary Thailand in a very honest way. So I think that was the bigger challenge to me. Is I was saying yes and finding that yes, we were going to have the support, we'd have just about enough money to do it well, never quite, but it was tight. It was a tight schedule and budget for the ambitions of the project, but I really knew that a great deal of it was going to be in Thai. And I felt like it was a Thai story, and yet I wanted to bring my excitement for it, my experience dealing with movies based on real events to this story. I thought I could really contribute, but I knew I was going to have to rely upon, you know, people who I hadn't really worked with before, and gain their trust. And keep asking that question over and over again. Does this feel honest? Does this feel right?
What were your, did you have any cinematic inspirations while you were reading Bill's script in terms of how this was going to be laid out, or was this unto its own in your head?
I think, I was reading it and really appreciating it because I was learning a lot, and I had followed the story, but there were twists and turns I didn't know about that Bill did and built into the screenplay beautifully. I appreciated that original draft I read even more after we'd gone through a lot of rewrites and our Thai co-producers and the cast had weighed in, and I discovered, you know, new aspects through my own research that I included. You know, we kept working and fleshing the whole thing out, and yet I so appreciated that original draft that I read because he understood it, and he understood it dramatically, but he also understood it on a very human level in terms of where those challenges were most acute and most threatening to body or soul. And so, his script was great. I think my documentary experience in recent years, I knew was going to serve me well, and it did. And I didn't want to sort of impress upon it a kind of a faux doc look, I definitely wanted it to feel like it wasn't staged. It was captured. I talked about that with my very first hire was, once I knew we were making the movie, beyond Bill Connor, who's the first AD who I worked with so many years and also came on as a producer on this, was Siamphu Mukti Prom, the cinematographer, somebody who I'd had my eye on. He's a terrific artist. He's, you know, well known, an international filmmaker, but, you know, if he was interested in this script, if he believed in our script, and would commit, I knew I wanted him to do it. And his was a very fast yes, which was comforting to me, in you know, kind of every imaginable way. And I talked to him about, you know, sort of my desire to you know, I said I'd like Thai audiences to, if they didn't know who directed it, I'd like them to think a Thai directed it. And he said, I will be your angel. And he was. But by the time we got started, you know, there were, I had managed to deputize a number of people, and from the Thai side of our production, and also just recognize how important the story was to you know, each and every one of them. And and of course that inspired, you know, everyone around the production. We shot it in Queensland, but you know, all these Westerners, they, you know, we could see it in their eyes. And of course the story was important to us as well, whether in front of the camera or behind it. Yet, you know, there was never less complaining ever on a movie.
What surprised you when you were reading the script? What didn't you know about the story? Is there a couple of things you could share with us?
Well, I didn't know anything about, you know, sedating the kids.
I was going to say the same thing.
And I also didn't understand. And once I understood that, I had no idea how risky that was. And what a, you know, the various ways in which that could really was an act of heroism, because you know, it could threaten their careers and lives and the divers and can you imagine the sort of the, you know, the psychological baggage one would carry. Of course, they went into it expecting, hoping, praying to save one or two, and so their expectation wasn't that this was going to you know, bring all the kids home safely. So you know, it exceeded their wildest imaginations. But you know, this is why I really wanted to leap on this story, because I felt that what the real volunteers and rescuers had and the Thai government had achieved with this was this remarkable object lesson in cross-cultural collaboration, commitment to a really worthy goal, despite recognizing that the odds were very, very uphill. And that I thought that's, we need kind of, I need this story. You know, I mean, I loved working on it. It was nourishing to tell this story, even though we had to work hard. It was one of the most challenging projects I've ever done in a lot of ways, but it meant a lot to all of us to do it. And it's meant a lot to share it.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
For research purposes, did you go back to the actual location in Thailand to kind of scope it out?
Due to COVID, I was unable to. And so that wound up being a remote scout. Thai production people on the ground went to the location. Siampu went to the location and looked. A production designer, Molly Hughes, wasn't able to go again due to COVID, but an art director from Thailand that she knew she was going to work with scouted. We also were able to get specs of the cave system and work with the divers to understand where the most dangerous pinch points various characteristics that really threaten the operation. And those are the ones that we focused on trying to build around and stage our scenes around. And it was just a, you know, so even during that COVID period, storyboarding began, rewrites were underway, research was underway. I kind of knew I was going to have to do it remotely, although I kept thinking we'd go there and even and shoot first there. I wanted to shoot first there to, you know, then that was going to be impossible. And ultimately, our unit was never able to shoot in Thailand. We wound up, we completed photography. I rehearsed with the actors all the scenes that were left to shoot in Thailand. Siampu went home. They all went home, went through their own quarantine again because there was another big outbreak. We had to wait that out. Now we were fairly deep into post-production, and finally we were going to be able to shoot there, but there was a window of availability for the actors and weather and other things, and there wasn't time for me to go and go through a 14-day quarantine and be there. So it meant I was glad I had rehearsed with the actors ahead of time. There weren't that many dialogue scenes. Mostly it was about capturing the spirit of the mountain and some wide shots, but there were a few dialogue scenes. Siampu was able to do those. That was very helpful because, nobody understood the story better than Siampu. And I was I was there on my little iPhone, kind of remotely looking at takes and giving notes. And it fortunately worked out.
Can you talk about recreating the caves? Was there a certain acreage that was built?
It was all built. They were tanks, five or six different tanks that we constructed in a warehouse in Queensland. Three of the tanks were to house the tunnel systems, which again were these sections that the divers had pointed out to us that were the most challenging and the most unique. And then two other larger tanks were used for the caverns. One was the cave opening, the interior of the cave opening, and the entrance to the cave. And then the other one was Chamber 9, where the boys and their coach were isolated waiting out the rescue. And then another tank was used we shot Chamber 9 first. We had to shoot everything with the boys first because we needed that tank to then do this multi-purpose cavern that Molly constructed that actually worked for three different key caverns, chambers, along the way. If we shot it from various directions and changed a few things, we kept kind of reusing the same set. So there were a lot of efficiencies that needed to be kept in mind here, even while, you know, our creative ambitions were high. Before long, the actors got through their quarantine in Queensland and began training. And they trained not only with our sort of experienced film crew dive team and Charlie Crawwell, the second unit director and stunt coordinator, but also Rick Stanton was there and Jason Mallinson. And so even while they were in quarantine, they were already talking to the divers and our art department, our prop department, about the gear and their gear, and much of it bespoke, handmade in some instances by them. And so the actors were not only rehearsing scenes with me, not only talking through the script, but also, you know, already interacting with Rick and Jason and just practicing like handling their gear. You know, we dropped off dive gear for them so that by the time they were clear of that, we still had 2 weeks of prep. That's when they could learn to dive. That's when I could rehearse the scenes. And that's when Viggo Mortensen and Colin Farrell came to me and said, now that we've learned these dive techniques, which is very specific when caving, we want to do all the diving. And I said, well, I'm not sure that's safe. I'll check. I really appreciate that, but it's also going to be really difficult for us to schedule because we have concurrent water unit shooting alongside first unit. And, you know, you're heavily involved in both. not sure we can pull that off. Vigo said, I really urge you to try because I think it'll make a huge difference. I'll feel a lot more comfortable. And I will, you know, I will waive turnarounds and I will shoot on Saturdays, and everyone else fell in behind that. Once Charlie Crowell said, yes, we've seen them. We all agree that, safety is not an issue, that they're capable. I mean, safety is always an issue, and you know, there were safety divers everywhere, but there were some sections where you literally couldn't have access to them. There were some long passages that they had to be able to go through. Well, they became so adept that we finally realized that one way to get a camera in there was for them to do what I started to call the selfie pass. And they would literally, you know, pull themselves using the rope or and maneuver through those caves holding the camera on their own faces as they would go through, or they would follow the other divers through and get those POV shots. So they accomplished a lot. Of course, we had Simon Christides, who's a world-class underwater photographer and cinematographer, who was, you know, all over this project you know, incredibly helpful. Again, everybody felt the way I did. We just wanted to get it right. It was a movie for the moment. We knew that it was an opportunity to celebrate, you know, a stunning, remarkable human achievement. We didn't want to let the story down. I also think that, well, I know that we all felt that there was something that we had a specific. We had a specific objective in doing a scripted narrative version of this story. And that is to get really granular about what it means to be there. What does it take? What's the skill set? What's the psychological disposition? How does it change? And for me as a director, I was trying to understand that and convey it with a very large cast. Everyone thought of this as an ensemble movie, and of course it is. And it's one thing that I'm really, really proud of is I think how many characters cut through and are vivid, interesting. We as an audience feel like we understand something about them and care. I don't know that I've ever had a movie with a larger cast that made, you know, with that many characters that made a strong impression, including, you know, Apollo 13 or Backdraft or some of those.
You are known for the event drama. And, you know, pandemic, of course, has changed movie-going habits. But even pre-pandemic, you know, the type of... Do you think the event drama can be made again for the big screen? Do you think there is a big audience for it? Does it take a little hook? Like Ransom had a thrill, you know, had a thriller aspect. Da Vinci Code had a thriller aspect.
You know, I think we're still learning as we go here, or you know, and it's being redefined. I do believe in it. I do believe that that, you know, sort of adult dramas, especially when they transport an audience to a place and create suspense, you know, are engaging enough, entertaining enough to enough people that, you know, if priced properly, I think they can be a reasonable bet, and I think most studio executives feel that way. I'm not sure studio execs are ready to make any declarations about any genre outside of recognizing that, you know, horror is really working, tentpole fantasies are working and animation, you know, works. But that sort of four quadrant or date night kind of content, you know, is working really well. But I really don't believe anybody's given up on the idea or even pretends to really know. And at the end of the day, the audience is going to define it, and the world around us, you know. And so while, you know, I certainly have preferences, I mostly want to tell stories I care about. Mostly I want to create an environment where actors and, you know, and the key collaborators behind the camera can flourish and really excel. I enjoy that. I enjoy the energy around, you know, world-class talents striving to achieve. That's really exciting for me. And that's certainly what we had with 13 Lives and what I hope to have on every project.
Is there another Western in you?
I hope so. Yeah. I'm not working on one right now. I don't have the story. I think a story, again, whether it's for streamers or theatrical, you know, again, I'm pretty agnostic about that. As long as I can, you know, fully actualize the potential of a story, that's really what I mostly care about. But, I think that time period can be an interesting one to transport audiences into. I don't think you can celebrate the tropes. I think the only way to do it is to sort of find relatable connections to those characters and the circumstances that somehow are a little bit relevant to today and ring a bell for us today. So I don't think you can, I'm not sure a Western built around nostalgia for a genre is something that sort of that I would look to do. I think every time period's of interest, and you know, what cinema does is transport people in an exciting, compelling way. By the way, it's fun to learn something. As long as you don't have to be bored learning it. When I read 13 Lives and thought about it, I thought, well, this is for me personally, selfishly, I'm going to learn so much about Thai culture I didn't know. I can apply my experience to this, and yet it's still going to be, it's not going to be repetition. It's a new set of filmmaking challenges. These are really interesting acting opportunities for a number of people. And I felt like there could be even more. And I felt like that it was a real movie for the moment where I could transport an audience and really entertain them, and that the suspense was there to really get people to lean in, you know, whether that's from their couch or in a movie theater seat.
What's next for you?
Right now, I'm kind of midway through my first animated movie, which is called Family Treehorns for Netflix. Doing that with Animal Logic, learning a lot, enjoying a lot, and it won't be out for a couple of years, but I'm excited about that one. I've started in just recent months doing the first wave of interviews for a documentary for Disney Plus about Jim Henson, creator of the Muppets.
That's amazing. Ron Howard, thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Crew Call podcast on Deadline. I'm your host, Anthony D'Alessandro. Make sure you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode.